Our One Day Wednesday pledge drive is coming up in 2 days, and we could use your help. Hope you'll cast your vote for shorter pledge drives. Make your gift early to set the stage for a successful One Day Wednesday at WPR.org. And thank you for that. And you have to do it. Otherwise, our weather guy, Steve Ackerman, is going to make a blizzard.
I'm going to make a blizzard. That's right. Make it rain for 40 days if you don't.
Oh, good to see you.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Steve is director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences. John Martin will be with us in a few minutes. He's finishing up a class he's teaching. He's a professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. So great to have Steve with us right now. John will be joining us shortly, and we hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And certainly we would love to hear from you. We already have people who are, let's see if I can find the Facebook comments here. Where are they? Okay. Oh, there's one. Terry was saying, it's a little disturbing to see these lush blooms and greenery. It looked like early June rather than April. Now my question is, what is August going to look like?
Good question. Terry, the outlook for August could be, in terms of temperature, above normal, normal, or below normal. We don't really know.
And you're emphatic about that.
I'm emphatic about it. Now, when John gets here, he'll say that there's a greater probability of it being above normal because of analysis that he had done a couple of weeks ago, where he looked at the fact that if we have a really warm winter, what's the chances of it of having a really warm or warmer than normal summer? And there are some folks out at the National Weather Service in Sullivan who had looked at that, and then they found out that, yeah, if I remember the number right, it's about a 75% chance that we'll be warmer than normal for this summer, which is pretty high.
There was another Facebook comment from Gary Hacker, who remembers seeing the aurora borealis when he was younger in the early 70s, and the northern lights were streaks of white light. Now they seem to be different colors. Is it because of pollution, or was I just not lucky enough to see the colored northern lights? It was a luck issue, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a luck issue, because when I've seen them down here or in New York, I've seen it the reds and the greens, which are the two different colors are caused by the two different molecules, nitrogen and oxygen.
Yeah. There was an interesting item in the news over the weekend. A person in Jefferson County, Florida, was struck by the falling instrumentation package of the 12Z balloon launch from Tallahassee. And the National Weather Service estimates the odds of this happening were 1 in 506.8 quadrillion.
Could you write? and that
what
was
are the odds.
And that was for the situation if you were in that county. So for us, it
would be
zero.
Much higher. Yeah,
we wouldn't.
It was zero.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so yeah, at the
person
same,
wasn't injured.
No. These are very light packages. They're probably a few ounces. With a lot of styrofoam around the outside and packages, and they come down in balloons. Not balloons. They go up in balloons twice a day at the same time all over the world. And then when the balloon bursts, a parachute gets launched, and it comes down. So it slowly settles down, and that guy must have obviously not been looking up.
Well, it brings to mind a good, interesting question. What happens to all that equipment that's up there in the atmosphere?
Yeah, most of them in our latitudes will drift towards the east. So unfortunately, many of them fall in the ocean. A lot of them end up in the Midwest in particular, in farmyards. And so we were involved with an experiment in Kansas, and we went into this one barn of a farmer, and he had a whole slew of them lined up on his wall. that he had found in his field.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah, there are, you know, if you find one, there's instructions on how to mail it back. And it gets mailed back for free. And then the National Weather Service will refurbish them, recalibrate them, and then reuse them.
Oh. Well, it was the last week we were talking about the winds and how the winds will move things around. Somebody called in when the Washington, was it Washington with the big a mountain, the explosion in probably the 80s, was it?
Oh, it
was
Mount St. Helens?
Volcano, Mount St. Helens, yeah. That cars in Minneapolis, St. Paul were all dusted white from that.
Yeah, yep. And the same thing even later. I think it was in the, like, 88, there was some big fires down in Mexico. And that smoke got up into the atmosphere, and the atmosphere just invected it, blew it along all the way up to us.
Yeah, and we smelled that smoke.
We smelled that smoke, yeah. And it turned our sunsets nice and red, and even put a layer of ash, a very thin layer of ash on our cars. I remember going out there and running my finger along it. Saying, wow, this is amazing.
Oh, man. Steve Ackerman, our guest, talking. Well, we're talking weather with him. We haven't gotten into tornadoes, but we'll get to that. And certainly we'll get to your questions when you call in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And it's not weather-related, but your building here on UW campus is home to a hawk cam. Mm-hmm. Or is it your building? Or
yeah, it's on the
located on a ledge of Weeks Hall building, isn't it?
So the nest is on Weeks Hall, and we sit above Weeks Hall. So we have a camera that looks out one of our, I think it's a 10th floor window that looks down on it, and then displays it. And it's been very, very, in fact, so popular that we've had to move it over to another site. So if you go there's an advertisement that pops up. Just wait 3 seconds and then close it, and then you'll get a live cam of the Hawks. And we're looking at trying to get it off that site, but it was so popular that it just brought down our network, and we couldn't do our work. So it's just like we got to do something.
Well, and people are going to see a hawk.
So they'll see both the mom and dad taking turns feeding three little white chicks, and you know they land. It's a little boring when the chicks are sleeping, but every now and then the one of the parents will show up with a rabbit or a squirrel, and you can actually watch them feed the chicks. It's pretty amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch, and it's a very clear image as well.
Yeah, and I think we've got that posted up on my Facebook page, so people can just click onto that and go right to the site.
Yeah, so. it's fun to watch. It's going to be, we've done this last year and maybe even the year before then, and it's kind of fun to watch the chicks grow, and then eventually, you know, they'll be off on their own.
Yeah,
and that, you know, if you look at it, you'll say, you know, how do you fit basically four birds in that thing when they all start to reach maturity? It gets a little crowded in there.
Dennis in Pigeon Falls. Hi.
Hi. I got a question about the Greenland ice cap. I've heard that beneath the ice cap there are these lakes of water, and I don't know if that's new or not, but I wonder if there is a risk of the whole ice cap just sliding off into the ocean.
So at the bottom of those ice sheets on Greenland, and as well as in Antarctica, they actually, when they sit on the ground, yeah, they're sitting on a very thin film of water. And what's enhancing their rate of loss off the mainland there is that amount of water is going up. And so that's allowing them to slip faster because it's reducing the friction. Now, I don't know about lakes underwater in Greenland. I know that they have them in Antarctica, and they're really big. And they're really old, too. They're very old water. And they move around. You know, so if you get a little crack in the ice, all that water in that lake, that under ice lake, can move to a different area.
Oh.
I haven't heard of any of those in Greenland. Doesn't mean that they're not there. I just haven't heard of them.
John Martin just joined us. John, have you heard of...
You know, in Antarctica, there's Lake Vostolek.
Under ice lake.
Yeah, but I don't know if there are any in Greenland.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
They make the ice into Swiss cheese, though, guys, don't they, by what you were just talking about? They can.
Yeah, you know. Right. They help make it. And then once the ice sheet then goes out over the water, that's where it can dissolve. And when you start getting holes, and you see that in the lakes around here, you know, puddles start to develop.
Yeah.
And once you get puddles, then they act like Swiss cheese. The sun heats that water up real quick. They get holes, and then everything collapses and goes away.
Yeah, I don't know if they have them in Greenland.
Yeah, no? I haven't. I know there's water underneath them, and that helps them slide.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Dennis, for calling. Philip in Edgerton. Hi.
Hi. Now, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about when I say I have seen a mammary cloud. Do you understand the term?
Mammatus, you mean.
Yeah.
A mammary cloud. What I seen was the sky was entirely smooth, and all over I looked, it looked like a bunch of otters hanging down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a mammatus cloud.
Yep.
Still don't really know how they form. I think that, to be completely honest about that.
Right, yeah. There's still several hypotheses about how they form. But they're interesting in the sense that they're one of the few clouds that form as air descends.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Most clouds form as air goes up, not as it comes down.
And there aren't many also, I guess for the same, maybe the same thing, there aren't many also that have pendants hanging down. They all hang up. When you get to the top of the cloud and you're flying over it in an airplane, it's bumpy.
Yeah.
The bottom's not usually bumpy, but it is from mammatus.
Yeah.
So they look like a cow's udder.
Yeah, that's, I think, how they got their name.
Yep. And they hang out of thunderstorms usually, and usually indicate that there's some good precipitation nearby, though they themselves aren't very hazardous. I guess if you fly into them, you probably get a lot of turbulence. I wouldn't do it.
Even if someone told me they're not hazardous, I wouldn't do it. They're scary looking.
It's like the water spout, you know? Yeah, yeah, you could go into that.
Right. Oh, yeah. So I'm not. Looks good on you.
It looks, so it could look a little bit like, almost like you were, a tornado's forming or something.
Well, people do tend to say that, those who have a recollection of seeing a tornado, they'll often say that there was a mammatus cloud, if you force them to answer that question, somewhere during the same day. But they're not, there's no physical correlation as far as I know.
No, yeah. Usually they are out on the what we call the anvil of the cloud. So there's the big updraft center of the cloud where all the nasty weather and the precipitation is occurring. And then that air spreads out, and it's usually hanging from that spread out air.
Very interesting. Thanks, Phil, for calling.
Yeah, they make some fantastic pictures.
Yeah, they sure do. That is absolutely right.
Appreciate it. We have Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests today, our weather guys, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at our weather today, zeroing in a little bit on tornadoes. We'll get to that shortly. But weather questions of all types with our two guests, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. He's also a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences. John Martin, professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Together, they are our weather guys who come by pretty much the last Monday of every single month.
Pretty much, except for...
Except for May.
May.
Then it's... when it's Memorial Day.
That's right.
Then we do it on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I got my bird questions for you, too.
All right. Here's a farmer in Amro found this. Where do I return it?
Oh, it looks like a sond, huh?
That looks like a sond, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a radio sond that he's got posted here on the Facebook. Except I'm used to seeing them enshrouded in styrofoam.
Yeah,
it must. So I wonder if he opened it up and took it out, and that's the guts of it.
It could be. Or it could have gotten busted up when it landed or something, too. You never know.
Yeah, it could have.
That could have been, too, right?
That could have been, too.
Yeah.
Oops, now I lost it. Oh, well.
Because usually it's on that outside packaging where they tell you where you can mail it to.
Right, that's right.
So that's why he wouldn't have known.
Why he wouldn't know, right.
Yeah, okay. So where do you send it?
I don't know the address. Usually there's an address there, and you just pop it in the mailbox, and away it goes.
And you don't have to. I don't think you have to pay because it's government property.
No, right? Yeah, it's all.
It'd probably be a good idea to just go to the post office, and they'd probably take care of it.
Oh, they might be. Yeah,
you know, I think they probably would be in another federal agency.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Hang it up on my wall.
Yeah. Right.
That's the other option. You don't have to tell anybody.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Well, there's another option.
Yeah, the return rate is low, isn't it?
It is. So even though you can do it for free, the return rate is
People always want to keep it for a keepsake.
Or maybe the largest fraction never get found. You know, I mean, they fall in places where nobody lives, and they get covered by leaves at the in the end of the season or something.
Right.
You know, whatever season.
Get hit by a tornado or something.
Something like that, right, yeah.
Speaking of tornadoes.
Here we go.
Here we are. We're in tornado season.
Yeah, yep. We started off not a record-breaking year, but pretty darn close. There's been like 330 confirmed tornadoes in the U.S. already.
And that's separate ones now, because I think that, was it the 15th or 14th there was an outbreak, and there were...
Yeah, between the 13th and the 15th.
Okay. And the normal thing is they double count, because everybody's reporting a tornado, and they can't tell if it's one or it's the same one at two different locations. But after a couple of weeks go by, they figure that out.
Yeah, so these are confirmed, which means, they went out and they... And 63 confirmed deaths, I think, in the U.S.
Yeah, some really mean tornadoes.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me, what causes a tornado? And I, you know, what kind of weather do you need for it? And
you need a whole bunch of ingredients have to be in place at the same time. You need a lot of what's called vertical wind shear, and that is wind speed differences and directional differences with increasing height. So that's one ingredient that helps to, you know, accommodate the rotation and generate the rotation in these storms. And you need to have poorly stratified air, and so it's got to be ready to just explode in a cumulus cloud. And that's it's an ingredient that's plentifully available in the south-central United States. And it can actually, you can get the ingredients set up and then cook them a little bit in the southern United States. It's rather unusual. There's not many other places in the world that can do that. And then they can really explode, and when they do, they can unleash some really disastrous storms, as we see every spring.
We had some really bad ones this year, it seems like.
Yeah, that outbreak on the April 13th, 14th, 15th was pretty bad, but pretty well forecast. Or
it
at
was
least,
very well forecast.
By the National Weather Service,
People knew that was coming several days in advance. Yeah. And, you know, we don't get site-specific tornado forecasts yet. Maybe we never will. I'm not even sure it's really a goal that we ought to pursue, because if you can spend your resources making those 2 and 3 day outlooks as accurate as we've been able to do, and then vigilantly watch the radar, I think you do pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, right. You know? What you want is to give people lead time, 30 minutes or
exactly.
so that they can actually protect themselves.
Get themselves out of harm's way, and that's been pretty effective.
Yeah. Are these weather radios worth it? Or?
I think they are if you live in a place like that. I wouldn't. I almost think about it in the summertime around here. I don't want to be woken up hearing a tree come through my window. I'd rather hear, you know, the weather radio tell me there's a chance in the next couple of hours you're going to have some really violent winds or, you know, hailstones or whatever it might be. That's me. And if I lived down there, there's no way I wouldn't have one.
Yeah.
And my answer is, I have one.
There you go.
Now, does it set you off or wake you up in the middle of the night every other night?
No, it's been pretty good. But actually, as I'm saying that, I realize that I have not changed the battery probably in about 3 or 4 years. So if power goes out and a tornado comes, it's going to be pretty useless. So I need to go check that battery.
There you go. Paul in La Crosse has a comment. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Sorry, my question's not about tornadoes, but
that's all right.
I've noticed in the past, over the years, that it seems like the sunset color in winter is more pinkish, and in summer it's more orangish. And I'm just wondering if that has something to do with humidity. Usually, it's drier in the winter than it is in the summer, or if there's some other factors involved.
No, that's good observations, and. It's going in the right directions for the reasons you just said. Usually when you get like reddish sunsets, they're going to be caused by tiny particles. And then as they get bigger, they go to the oranges and then eventually kind of gets whitish. And in the summertime, the humidity is higher. And so generally the particles get a little bit bigger. The pollution particles are aerosols, as we call them. So, it would tend to... I think we would see intensity changes in the color between winter sunsets and summer sunsets, although probably pretty subtle. And I think you'd see the same thing between sunsets and sunrises. You don't have
sense,
as much at a sunset, you know, you've had the whole daytime to kick up aerosols and get particles into the atmosphere. So it might see subtle changes in those colors as well.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Peter in Appleton, hi.
Hi. I have this image of the polar air mass as sort of being like a guy with a bad toupee, you know, that can kind of slip over one side. Is that accurate, that if it slips down here, it's cold here, but it's warm over in Minsk or something?
What an excellent question. I have to tell you, Peter, it's right in line with the kind of thing I've just begun to think about and analyze and calculate. The cold pool in the Northern Hemisphere has shrunk undeniably over the last 50 years. And I think we're the first to actually be able to say that because we're the first ones to calculate this. Now, the next question is exactly what you're asking. What if we divide the hemisphere into sectors? Does it kind of pulsate from one to the other? And does is there any kind of coherent way in which they behave? My suspicion is like yours. I bet you there'll be something like that going on. But I'm willing to be surprised. It may turn out that that's not the case. I'm pretty sure it's not the case in the Southern Hemisphere because you've got a continent right at the pole, and that makes and not much continent south north of that. It's very different in the Northern Hemisphere where the pole is without continent, and then there's continent surrounding it everywhere. So it's quite a different distribution of land and water in the Northern Hemisphere. But you might be right. We're going to find that out hopefully in the next year or so.
I'll keep an eye on it.
All right, great. Yeah, thanks, Peter.
I can see John's next publication.
Yeah, there it comes.
The Toupee Theory. Yeah. Watergate Mass Movement.
Carol in Clintonville. Hi.
Hi there. I just have a question. My daughter just moved to Minneapolis, and I live about 35 miles west of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hmm. And her weather is much hotter in the summer and colder in the winter than mine is. Mine's, you know, the opposite. And I was wondering if living 35 miles away from Lake Michigan, the lake affects our weather this far inland to keep us, you know, both cooler and warmer. Or if I'm too far away.
I'd say it does. For a first-order measurement like temperature, I'd say it certainly has an effect. Whether or not you get lake breeze thunderstorms or not would be a surprise if you got them that far inland. But they're, it, you know, being near the bay and near the lake at the same time can give you some a combination of circumstances that might, you know, extend the influence of the lake even in that regard. But I think for sure in temperature, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
Okay, I just was curious. I knew, you know, the ocean certainly does, you know, land mass near it, but I didn't know if the lake was big enough to actually affect the weather.
Yeah,
you
I think
know,
it is.
I, it was okay. Interesting. I was talking to somebody else about this, a regional planner who said, and maybe I brought this up on the show again, I can't remember if I have or not, but he said if the turnpike should have been built about a mile south of where it was built, because it would have winter storms, and that would have been far less of a problem if they'd just gone like mile and a half south of where they went.
I think fog,
and
too.
Fog was the other way.
Right, Sheboygan is really bad. They could have moved it a little bit more inland. It would have been a big difference.
Yeah.
How far does the lake affect the weather, would you say? How far away
oh,
from
how
the
far?
Is the weather affected? Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking, how could we measure that? Mm. And you know, to find out what that distance is. And I think the way to do it would be to take a bunch of stations all around the lake at different distances and look at an analysis of, like, the differences between daytime maximum, daytime minimum, nighttime minimums. Well, the differences between the summertime temperatures and the wintertime temperatures, because those differences are usually a measure of continentality or how much of a landmass you are.
I'm thinking a senior in atmospheric and oceanic sciences might take that.
That would be because all that data's around, and it would be
an
interesting thing
to
do. Yeah, and do it around the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a fun thing to do.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming.
We're getting some good ideas.
Orographic, too. I think you'd have to worry about what the orography is.
Also the major paths of which storms are moving.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, assign that now. And
I got that. It's the Toupee Theory and the Lake Breeze Theory.
Yeah, we're going to get ourselves in trouble.
Jackie in Milwaukee, hello. Hey,
we're back to tornadoes.
Okay.
I've got an alarm system. I'd rather hear it and be awakened than and have it someplace not so far away or close. But anyhow, I listen to the National Weather Bureau forecasts, and every once in a while they insert, along with the recorded stuff, a voice, a live voice. Mm. And the man said the one night, when you hear of a tornado warning, open the windows on every side of your house so the tornado will not suck the inside of your house out. Next, a week later, a woman, live voice, came out and said, don't bother with windows. Get to a safe place.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't bother with the windows.
The windows, I don't know how that got in there, but it's not good advice.
Yeah.
Oh, so it is not so.
No, the pressure difference is big if the funnel is right on top of your house, but that's not going to be what destroys your house.
It's going to be
something else. So you want to make sure that you're in a safe place. That's the priority number one.
Okay, so people should be told about that in the paper or something.
I completely agree.
Yeah. And they should stay away from windows because of flying debris.
Right.
I mean, so even if the tornado doesn't get to your house,
opening the window.
Right, yeah, because then you're in the path of flying debris.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. And as long as we're on that, there's always the debate is, you know, is it the northwest corner or the southeast corner of the basement? Where do you go?
It's the basement.
You go to the basement.
They used to specify a particular one based on the climatological paths of tornadoes. But one thing they started finding out was that, you know, people would go down into the basement and then they would like, okay, so where do I go?
Yeah.
And you don't want to be standing on the stairs trying to figure out where you want to go. So just
that's not a good idea.
Down and, you know.
You can maybe get under the stairs?
Or under the stairs, yeah.
Or under a nice big table.
Something above you is always good.
Interior closets that are well supported are things they say are good places to go to.
Bathrooms.
Bathroom, get in the tub, put a mattress over you, you're in pretty good shape. Unless it's third floor bathroom, you probably don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Lowest level one you can get.
Yep.
But if you know what the southwest corner of your basement is, that might
be. Yeah, you might as well go there.
Paint a big SW on the wall so that you go down the stairs, you know where to go. Because they do tend to come from the southwest and head to the northeast. That's generally the case.
All right. There we go. Chris and Howard, hello to you.
Doing well. Thanks for my call. Off tornadoes again. Sorry, guys. About 5 years ago, we were camping and saw a cloud formation that I've never seen before and never saw again. It looked like waves or ripples throughout the cloud cover, very defined, very equally spaced. Mm-hmm. Stretched for as long as the clouds we could see them, and this was right before we got hit with a massive thunderstorm, and the clouds were about gray to green, pretty menacing looking. We, needless to say, packed up quick and got out of Dodge, but it was a pretty brutal storm that followed, and I've never really seen the clouds quite like that, so I'll take your response off here.
Interesting. Mm. I wonder if these were the kind of wave... The wave look that they had was sort of the first grade of drawing waves, you know, for Columbus Day or something. You know that their curlicues,
right?
Because then I'd think of Kelvin Helmholtz
right,
in the vicinity of a thunderstorm.
Right.
Yeah. But it could just be gravity waves.
That's what I was thinking.
Showing
up
in the clouds.
Waves. Yeah. You know? So that up and down motion of a gravity wave, just like when you throw a rock in a pond, you get that up and down wave-like structure.
Okay.
It means that there's turbulence around, and a lot of times that's generated by convection.
Right, that would be consistent with that.
Yeah, and if it's green, then
you got hail,
you know, you got some nasty stuff in that.
Yeah, and how does it turn green, or how is it?
It's refraction, isn't it?
It has to do with refraction and scattering, and there was a lot of debate about it a couple of years ago, and the last I remember looking at it, the conclusions were that you needed to have a heck of a lot of water in that cloud.
Oh, okay, water.
Which usually then is associated with being able to generate big hail.
Mm.
So
yeah.
I ended up concluding, if it's green, you don't want to be there.
Yeah, right. If it's green, leave the scene.
Right, yeah.
Write that one down.
I'm going to write that one down. Green, leave the scene.
Oh, man. Dick in Waukesha. Hello.
Hello. Hey, back in 1948, I was... Four guys were driving across the high plains in Wyoming, and it was in the afternoon, and ahead of us were a line of vertical columns. I couldn't say several hundred feet high, and rotating, and evenly spaced, and it looked like a tornado. Well. You know, going in counterclockwise, and we were thinking, well, now how should we stop and wait, or should? As we kept on driving, and when we got up to them, there was a gap. We were between two of them.
Wow!
And it looked like there were more, but when we first saw them, there was a big cloud of mist, and we couldn't tell how many more. What the heck were those?
Was this a sunny day, or was this?
It was a sunny day.
And
Dust devils is what I would say, too.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't... It was pouring. When we went through, we got showered on, so it was water.
Oh, it's even more interesting. Well, I was going to say they were dust devils, because one of my roommates in graduate school used to drive down to Nevada from Seattle just to watch these things in the summertime, because they happen when the daytime gets pretty hot in the summertime over the high plains. But if there's water involved, maybe they were a hybrid of sort of a dust devil and a thunderstorm.
Well, There was water when we, you know, we had water on the car when we, but we didn't get hit by one of them, but
yeah.
There was water flying around.
Wow, that's very interesting. Hmm. Maybe it was a hybrid sort of thing, huh?
Yeah, right. Or maybe a dust devil, you know, that went over a pond or something like that and would suck up some
of the
water and then
right.
throw it away,
yeah.
throw it out.
I've had a couple other experiences with dust devils. I don't know if you know UW Waukesha Field Station. Do you know where that is?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yep.
Marlon Johnson. And we were burning a few years ago, and uphill, coming uphill, came this dust devil made by thousands of little bits of burnt grass, weed.
Oh, man.
And there were five or six of us there, and it just crept along and across a trail, and nobody had a camera.
Oh, man.
Right. My arms around it. But I thought if I did, it would destroy it.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of that's one of the advantages today of the new modern phones.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Is,
yeah,
it is.
You get pictures of everything.
Nowadays, you've got movies and
one more
photos.
Back when I was in junior high school, this was in New Jersey, and our playground was just a big field of sand. And boys were playing softball out there, and all of a sudden a dust devil came along. And I used to remember the name of the guy. He was an outfielder, and it enveloped him. And apparently that caused it to stop moving. And everybody else on the field was falling down laughing, and the whole classroom was in an uproar. And finally this guy staggered out of it, or it passed him, and he had his hands up over his eyes and over his head. He didn't realize that the thing was gone, and he was still... Finally, somebody went over and grabbed him.
Oh, man.
That must have helped his acne, I'm sure.
Right. Man. Thanks, Dick.
Yep.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh. We had an email from Sue in Arena. Why does the dew point determine or influence the low overnight temperature? Why can't everything just freeze and the temperature just keep dropping?
Mm. Because once you hit the dew point and the air tries to cool down, what happens is instead of the air cooling, it forms dew. And that releases energy into the atmosphere. So instead of the atmosphere losing energy, it starts to gain energy.
Yeah.
So it can't cool as fast.
And that puts the brakes on it, and you just don't go as low as you would otherwise. And the temperature can never be colder than the dew point. So if the water vapor content somehow gets replenished in the face of condensation, forget it. You're not going to get any colder.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting.
We have somebody wanted you to comment on the tornado predictions for Wisconsin's tornado
season coming
season
up.
This, yeah,
go for it, John.
Well, we have no basis whatsoever to make a seasonal prediction of tornado activity, it can't be done. We've been talking a couple times on the show in the last couple of months about the statistical likelihood that the summer will be warmer than normal, based upon the fact that the winter was warmer than normal. But I think there is now some deterministic forecasts that have just been issued. I think Michael was telling me about these the other day. That seem to suggest an average or cooler than normal summer. So I don't know what to think about that. I would guess the incidence of tornadoes goes up if the summer is warmer than normal, and goes down if it's cooler than normal, broadly speaking. So that's where we're at a quandary right now. We don't know what to expect.
Yeah, you certainly wouldn't expect any tornadoes given the kind of temperatures we have now.
No, absolutely
not. Right, yeah.
There's just not enough of the right ingredients on tap.
Yeah.
And as John was saying earlier, you know, there are these needed conditions, these sufficient conditions to get things going, but they're not. Doesn't mean we're going to get one,
That's
even
right.
if we have those conditions.
That's right.
So you're thinking could be higher or lower in the
middle. I'd say average.
Right.
I'd say average.
You'd say average?
Yeah, I'd say we're not going to look back at the end of the summer and say, wow, this was a desperately terrible tornado season in Wisconsin. That'll be my guess.
And I'm just going to write it down.
Not make it. He does.
John said 21 tornadoes.
There we go. Guys, always a pleasure. Now, we'll see you not the last Monday, but the last Tuesday of the month, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's correct.
After that.
That's
all right.
Correct.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much.
Bye-bye.
All right, then. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guest, Steve, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the UW-Madison. also professor of atmospheric science and oceanic sciences, John Martin, professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Great to have them along. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, help us make our One Day Wednesday pledge drive on May 2nd a success by making your gift early. I hope you'll give now. And track our progress at WPR.org. We're trying to keep track. We would like to get about 500 pledges before we have our One Day Wednesday. Tomorrow, appraiser Shirley Bauman's with us to help figure out what your collectibles may be worth. And then at 11:45, Miguel Weber joins us to talk about her book, Door County Outdoors. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.